Hello, welcome. These are the 12 essential tips for educating occupational therapy students. Throughout my extensive experience as a mentor to students, I've had the privilege of witnessing both the triumphs and the challenges that comes with guiding budding professionals. Now, I've been thinking of these experiences and I have uncovered various fundamental principles that consistently lead to successful student placement. These tips I have tested and I have refined over time, resulting to remarkable outcomes when students leave the placement with profound sense of inspiration. It's immensely rewarding to see the impact of these strategies, not only on the students themselves, but on the broader occupational therapy community. So in an effort to share these valuable tips, I have compiled brief guides consisting of 12 tailored specifically to educators. And these tips are designed to equip educators with the tools they need to foster growth, instill confidence, and ignite passion in their students. By embracing these strategies, educators can play a pivotal role in shaping the future generation of occupational therapists, empowering them to make meaningful contributions to the field. So whether you are a seasoned educator seeking to enhance your approach, or you are a newcomer eager to make a positive impact on students, I invite you to delve into these tips and discover the transformative potential that they hold. I hope that you find inspiration with these practical guidances as you embark your journey as an educator in the dynamic world of occupational therapy. Enjoy. Number one, know the reasons why your students wanted to be an occupational therapist. Know their drivers. At the instance that you've had your meeting with your student and introductions were made, it is important for you to find out what their reasons and what their drivers are. Second one, know their past placement experience, if they've had that, or know what their experiences are in terms of working with the hospital. Why is it important for you to do this? This is because when you have to give some examples of cases, you can tailor your examples based on their experience. And you can tailor their example based on their drivers as well. Like, for example, you have a student and you ask them for the first time what their reasons are for being an occupational therapist. And they said they have family members who has learning disability, and that's what drives them. So whenever you come across with some analogies and challenges and case studies or simple case discussions to discuss treatment, then you can quote and you can tailor those examples based on their drivers and their past experiences. So in doing so, students will be able to relate much better. Number three, know your students' learning strategies and methods. As an individual, or every individual has a different learning style and there's a different learning method, different modes or sensory modes of learning. So you need to find out, are your students visual learners? Are they auditory learners? Are they kinesthetic learners? And how are you going to find these things out? You can by observing the way they would describe things, or you can ask simply. Sometimes people are aware of their learning strategies and their learning methods. So me personally, when I have seen some students, I'd go and ask them what kind of learning method or strategies they do, what do they do when they need to study. And they sometimes will say, oh, I'm a visual learner, I like writing things, and I listen to that, or I discuss things. So that's something, these are some of the describers that will give you some tips as to the mode of learners they have. The auditory learners tend to repeat the words and they will tend to paraphrase things. So you explain some things to them, they will repeat it verbally because they want to hear it as well. And they want to talk things through. So that's one way of what, that's one of their strategies and styles. They would repeat some things. Then the other thing sometimes is they don't, sometimes they want it quiet. It just varies. It varies. You can have two options. You can have an auditory learner who is more on the repeating kind of thing. And then the other ones would be the ones that are, after they've heard it, they sometimes, when they want to retain the information, they don't want to be very noisy. So that's the auditory learner. The visual learners, they wanted to watch how things are done. And then they would write things down. They would make diagrams. And they wanted things organized and tidy. So you need to ask them whether they're tidy at home or they wanted to rewrite things. These are the visual learners. And the kinesthetic learners are the ones that really wanted to do hands-on activities. They wanted to feel if they're doing something, they wanted to try it. That's how they would retain the information. The other ones is they would write things down as well. So the movement, when they write things down, then they will remember the information that they needed to remember. There we go. So tip number three, know their learning strategies and methods. Tip number four, observe how they respond to you during conversation. And I guess tip number four is a tip that I'm producing so that you can establish what kind of learners they are. So when they're talking to you, observe them. Are they passive, which means they listen to you all the time and would not want to stress out or voice out their opinions? Are they passive? Or do they hold their opinion and they need to make sure that they voice their opinion straight away? And for those people who would speak out and voice their opinion straight away, sometimes you have to be mindful of yourself, because when they do, there is a potential that you can get annoyed. Because every time you're trying to explain something, they always have to make it a point that they respond back. So observe how they respond to your conversations or during your conversations. Tip number five, answer this. So after the first week or a few days of working with the student, answer this for yourself as an educator. What is it about your student that is annoying to you? There's always bound to be something, because sometimes there would be a mismatch between their mode of expression, their mode of communication, mode of learning, and your mode of instruction, especially if there's a mismatch. What do I mean by that? Like what I said earlier on, people can be visual learners. Students can be auditory learners, and students can be kinesiologically learner or kinesthetic learners, meaning they move. So that's their mode. Equally, for yourself as an educator, you also have a mode in which you understand things. You can either be a visual educator, an auditory educator, or a kinesthetic educator. So when you know, you need to know your style and your preference, because the way you would express things would always be reflective of that as well. And when there is a mismatch, there is something about the student that will annoy you. Like, for example, are they slow? So sometimes the kinesthetic learners, they're quite slow. And if you are a visual learner who is fast, then there's going to be a mismatch on that one. Do they not engage and participate in conversation? Sometimes if you're an educator and you feed on the interaction that's going on between yourself and the student, and the student's not giving that back to you, then it becomes very difficult because you feel that you have to spend extra effort and you're not getting any feedback in return, and it's going to be difficult for you to explain some of the learning points that you wanted the student to learn. Are they opinionated? And again, sometimes it will cross as opinionated. Students can come across as opinionated, particularly if they are auditory learners where they have to repeat the things that you say, or if they need to rephrase the things that you say, and they will come across as somebody who is opinionated. And when that happens, that would be obviously annoying for you as an educator. You also need to know their mannerisms. So there may be methods on how they perceive on words, on how they perceive on feedback. Whenever you say something and you put an information across, sometimes if it will create a tension to your student, meaning they don't believe on something, then it will come out as a form of a twitch or a facial expression or a little fidget here and there. So you want to find out the methods on how they perceive the words or they perceive information. And for example, when you say one thing, like I was saying earlier on, the students will restructure it so that it will be more understandable to them. So if you as an educator and the student communicate in the same manner and in the same mode, then there's not going to be a problem, and you will find that you have the most wonderful student ever. And that's only because you understand one another. But if there is a discrepancy, and so there's bound to be an issue. And what happens here is that a lot of message that will be said, you know, the communication that's discussed between the student and the educator will dissipate if you don't record the conversation. Or the best way of recording really is auditory or video recording. That would be amazing, but that's not easily accessible. So what am I saying? Let me repeat that. So whenever people are talking, student and an educator, if the two do not agree on the mode, or there's discrepancy on the mode of their communication style, one is coming from an auditory foundation or auditory one's coming from an auditory system, the other one was visual. So whenever people are talking, instead of the information being received, what's happening is that efforts are happening internally between the student and the educator. So efforts are happening, unconscious efforts to convert the messages in a manner that it is being understood by the listener. So I hope that's a little bit clear. I hope I made that a little bit clear. It's a bit complicated, but really it isn't. So tip number six, and this is a question more than a tip, really. It's more like a guiding question. Is it the student who needs to step up to reach on the educator's level, or is it the educator who should reach down to a student? Right? So I have observed this, and this has become a constant cause of problem between the educator and the student. The educator would have a very high expectation, and then the student cannot catch up with the expectations of the educator. And the educator, it annoys the educator, obviously, when this happens. But just remember, as an educator, just remember that these students do not have any skills yet. They're just building up their skills when it comes to the skill of occupational therapy. And so the foundation information, the foundation knowledge, the experience, it's very limited at the moment. So as an educator, it will be your responsibility to improve and to develop the student's skills. With the understanding, obviously, that the student is learning OT on their own accord, right? So that there is an element of the student being motivated to learn. With the element that the student wanted to learn occupational therapy, that it is on their own accord that they wanted to study occupational therapy. So you would assume that the student wanted to learn and they really wanted to do good and they really wanted to perform well. Yes? So you would note that most of the students, they go into occupational therapy because that's a choice that they have made. So they were not being forced by their parents to study occupational therapy. So they really wanted that. Before they land on your placement, they've gone through multiple screens throughout their studies, through school, through GCSEs, and through A-levels. They've gone through all of those stages. They've gone through lots of stages already that made them really decide to take up occupational therapy. So they do want to learn. But then the question again is, if they cannot understand things, who needs to catch up? Yeah. Does the student need to catch up? Yes, they need to make an effort. They will do what they can. But equally, the educators need to reach down and pull up. Okay, you have to go down to the level of the understanding of the student, and you may need to reframe your statements. You may need to reframe your examples. Being an educator and educating a student takes a lot of self-awareness on the part of the educator. You need to be aware of your strengths. You need to be aware of your skills, your soft spots, and your triggers. And it will be a noble pursuit to be an educator because it is an added task that one just needed to do, and you do not get any extra compensation for this. Let me give you some kind of a context and historical perspective on student educators. I think back in 2000 or early 2005, before the KSF, around the emergence of KSF, when students come in, from my experience, the universities are actually paying the educators extra. So around 100, 120, 150, if I'm not mistaken, from my experience anyway. So educators were getting extra remuneration paid for by the university for every student that they look after. And that's why back in those days, the educators were inspired to just look after student after another, because they get something extra for the effort that they needed to do. But then, for some strange, wonderful reason, the institution had a whiff of this extra resource that's coming in. So during the KSF, perhaps there was an agreement or non-agreement. Maybe there was no consultation at all. The management just decided that student education and being an educator would be a regular part of people's job responsibilities. So now, when you're an occupational therapist working in a workplace, after a while, you would be getting a student. You are obliged to get some students. And when you have the students, the money that used to go through the educators for the trouble of looking after the student now goes into the department. What is interesting is this. Now, the money now does not directly go to the department now. It goes into a certain pot somewhere, a few layers away from the department, and it goes into an education pot of the hospital or of the trust, or if there's an education department, it goes in there. So there's now this agreement that it will go somewhere, but it's just there. Nobody knows who's got this, but it's a money that's just coming in. So that's the background of that, really. Oh, that's why now it's called a noble pursuit. So being an educator, you need to be aware of you need to be self-aware. So tip number 7, have these framework that you want and you need to support the student, and that you'll do everything you can do to assist the student. Have these value and belief and framework. Put it in at the back of your mind that you want to help the student as an educator, as an OT. You are committing yourself to make sure that the student learns. So it is, again, almost like a vocational pursuit. It's a noble pursuit where you wanted somebody to learn. If you have it in your head that you really don't want the student, and that you remember all the time that the student was forced upon you, then you really would not want to have that student, and you are not going to tolerate the student, and you wouldn't really want to work with them. And so every day, for the amount of time, for the length of time that they are with you, is going to be a burden. Yeah. So have that framework that you really wanted and you need to support the student, and that you'll do everything you can do to assist. So if you have a helping framework in mind, then all of your actions then will be geared towards helping the student. Tip number 8, if you have student expectations, and I'm sure you will be expecting something. So this is tip number 8. Put your expectation on the level of the student. So level your expectation to the student's level. So for example, you have to know the level of the placement or the placement number of the student. Just remember, the earlier and the more novice they are, in which case, if they are more novice, then you'll have to explain and you'll have to emphasize the role, and you'll have to let them know about the MDT and the roles. But as the placement goes more on the latter phase, then the more you would anticipate that the student can approximate an entry-level skill in terms of the areas of assessment, in terms of the areas of treatment planning, and the treatment implementation. Okay, so know their stage in their student learning. Okay, just to recap, if they're early on their student learning, first placements, they just needed to be familiar with the setting. They need to know the roles. They need to be comfortable with the workplace, seeing students, seeing things that beep around the hospital. But if they're on the latter phase, then it's okay to anticipate that they should be able to talk to patients, that they should be able to identify problems and start doing their treatment planning. It's that process. How did they do the process of occupational therapy? It's funny because I've had an experience where there is an educator and the first placement of student, being observation phase only. Observation phase. 2 weeks of getting to know, or a month of observation phase. And the educator was not tolerant of the student, and she was going to fail the student on the first placement because the student was not yet using the digital platform, for example, or was not comfortable or did not know how to maintain the schedule, and the educator needed to remind the student on when the supervision needs to take place. And then the educator was going to fail the student, bless the student. In the end, I had to step up, and my colleague, a friend of, like another colleague, needed to step up to educate the educator, or to guide the educator, stating that this is only the first place and you are going to fail the student already. They haven't done any patient-facing activities. They were only observing, and they were going to fail because of their compliance with looking after their digital calendar. So that's not fair, isn't it? Tip number 9, leave your issues. Yeah, as an educator, that's a very, very beautiful tip that I could say. Leave your issues. As an educator, it's going to be difficult to look at after students, or it's going to be difficult to look at students' performance based on the merit alone. It's very hard to be objective. There is a high degree of chance that you will be seeing students' shortcomings, you will be seeing their faults and their errors, and you are seeing this, and there's a high chance that as an educator, you are going to compare this to your personal experience when you were a student yourself. Just remember these quotes. It was like, when I was a student, I used to, or back in my time, I used to. When it was me, I used to, okay? So leave those issues and just be objective and just be present, be there and then, or be here and now. So an educator should strive to leave all of their personal and professional baggage. I'd call it your professional baggage. But educators should bring their clinical experience so that this experience can then serve as case examples. So your experience, you can take your experience, just remember of the cases that you've handled, and use this to cite examples. Tip number 10. So the learning application should be evident on the last 25% of the placement time. So what do I mean by this? So a student, say, is going to be with you for 4 weeks. So 25% of the time would be the last week, okay? This last week should be where the learning application should take place. This is where you need to observe things. This is where you would mark things, like final mark. The last week is almost the summation of the first, or the last 25% is the summation of the student's learning. So what I would do is I am advising that when you have students, you need to divide these placements into 4 quarters, with every quarter having a different theme. Yeah. Quarter one, on the first quarter, you have to get the students to, location familiarization. So what you need to do is lay down the foundation bang on at the first week. Meaning, I want you to discuss the OT foundation knowledge. You talk about the continuum of care. You talk about the models of practice that you are using. Have this continuum overview, okay? You need to sort out the logistics. Get the student to observe as much as they can. Follow you, observe. And in the first place, or in the first quarter, you can even get the students to just start talking to patients, you know, from one person to another. They're not different. Their patients are not different. At the end of the day, it's the skill of talking to patients. So get them to start talking, interviewing patients, just being curious. This would be the quarter one, okay? Now, on the quarter two, you have to get them to start to direct that communication to being an interview, in a process of interview. So quarter two is all about conducting interview, and then you can get them to start practicing documentation on the quarter two. You can start learning about identifying the problems of the patient. So you can talk about the continuum of rehab, and then you can talk about planning the treatment. Okay. So review quarter one, familiarization with the place. Okay. And get them to start being curious, start talking to patients. Quarter two, start to write these things down. Okay. Structuring the interview more on a directed manner so that they'll be able to identify problems. Quarter three is when they can start implementing the treatment that they've been planning. They can start practicing the interview. They can start doing the documentation, and then they can start trialing all of those skills that they have. So again, quarter three is where they're now applying, beginning to apply. But this is where you need to correct things. You have to refine things. Supervise, identify, correct, report. Supervise, identify, give some tips, refine. So around quarter three, they should have had all of the experience. And if it's made clear at the first two quarters, quarter three should just be a refinement of things. And then quarter four would be overall the assimilation and the application of all learning. You know, at the end of the day, this is where you look back and compare, okay, where were we at the very beginning and how are we in the end, quarter four of their placement. And I'm sure you've had that experience as well. Remember that point and that time when you say, oh, people have been saying, just when I was about to get the hang of things, now my placement ends. See? Because a lot of things that are happening is in quarter four. Things have made sense. They have been applying things. They're getting the swing of things. The downside and the disadvantage is because it becomes limited. I might make it five quarters, but for now, let's stick with four quarters. When they're in getting on the swing of things, they have to leave. Meaning those learned behaviors, things that they've learned, has not really cemented yet, but they've had the swing of things. I think we'll have to discuss that and resolve that issue at some point. Okay, so that's quarter four then, the assimilation and application of learning. So I am suggesting, well, this is again a tip, avoid making prejudgments on quarters one and quarters two. On these stages, the educator should just have sussed the students' concerns. So on the first two quarters, you as an educator, you're not educating, you're also assessing. It's like a patient. It's not just like looking after a patient. On the first two quarters, you should have assessed the student's concerns, and these weakness can then be acted upon on the last two quarters, the third and the fourth quarters. And I guess that's where the halfway appraisal is. You know, it ties up with halfway appraisals and things like that. So a student should be expected to be more proficient, again, depending on their placement, by quarter four. Okay. And then tip number 11, this may be the final tip for the time being. Students should be given a lot of opportunity for hands-on experience. So as an educator, you should maximize all the opportunity for the student to work and to physically experience working with patients. Unless there are some technical procedures, for example, the technical procedure of, I don't know what technical procedure an occupational therapist would really do. So there's not a lot. But if a student needs to speak to patients, let them do it. You should enable the student's experience. You should make it an enriching experience for them by giving them the chance to actually work with patients. Yeah. So if you're doing NMES and you're placing all these pads, then let them do it. You know, show them where, let them do it. If you're doing passive stretches and you would demonstrate it to the student, you know, let them feel it. That's what they needed to do. That's why I kept on saying as well, this is where leave your baggage alone. So sometimes if you are a starting band 6 or you're a band 5, I'm sure you don't have a lot of experience yet. And you wanted to build that skill as well. But having a student there, you need to trust. Well, you need to assess whether it's going to be safe for them to do it. And then you have to let them do it. Because I have seen some band 5 educators and they're not letting a student do washing and dressing. What's wrong with washing and dressing, isn't it? You just give them a shirt. Patients, you give patients their shirts and you get them to put, you ask the patients to put it on. But for some strange reason, the educator, who was a band 5, did not feel it'd be safe for the student to do the basic assessment, the basic conversation, or would not leave a patient alone with the student, which is really strange. You can put two people in a room together and have a very wonderful conversation where the student would discover the occupational history of the patient. The last and final tip is this. Tip number 12, part ways in good terms. So after me seeing a lot of dynamics and a lot of cases between educators and students, I have noticed that there are wins and loses. It's not all the time that it's going to be a win. Some relationship, if it wasn't a good placement, the relationship will turn sour. At times, the experience is actually marrying and leaving the educator and the student both dissatisfied. And when the student leaves, they feel unappreciated and they feel that it hasn't been a very good experience. And it would be equally the same for the educator. Now, I've even seen cases that at the end of the placement, the educator and the students, sometimes they don't even do eye contact and they even stop talking to one another. So it is essential for you guys to know that not all relationship will be smooth sailing during the placement experience, but it's also important to understand that these experience, overall experience of having a student with you, will contribute to your professional growth and personal growth, both as an educator and as a clinician, and it will be contributing to the growth of your student as well. So if you think about all of your experiences, the future placement experience or future placement responsibilities that you needed to do as a clinician will be more successful. So when you are parting ways, it is important to just do it amicably, do it gracefully with, if not personal gratitude, do it with professional gratitude. So just remember, these students, once they passes, they will eventually become colleagues. That's the final tip, and that is tip number 12. If you are going to end the relationship and at the end of the placement, make it so that it is amicable and professional. All right, guys, I hope those things made sense. Again, these are the tips for an educator on how they can look after the students better. I hope you learned a little something today. Until next time, bye.